time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. This is Upfront on Love Sport.
You're listening to Upfront with James Gray, the podcast edition. You can listen to me live every weekday from 1 p.m. on Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport.
We're looking back at last night's absolutely epic game. That win by Liverpool in Porto, no one will forget. Well, honestly, did anyone watch it? If you were watching Liverpool-Porto, I think after 5 minutes you might have thought, oh, City have scored, that game looks interesting now. After 7 minutes you might think, oh, hello, what game's on at... By about 10 minutes, if you were watching Liverpool versus Porto, you had changed channel. Surely. If you hadn't, if you were the one person in the country who kept it on BT Sport 3 watching Liverpool-Porto, give me a ring, 0208 7020 558, because I want to hear from you. If you were at the City game last night, I know the trains back were very, very late. In fact, there was no train back from Manchester to London after the full-time whistle last night. If you're a Tottenham fan who was there, give us a ring. As I say, it's 0208 7020 558. We want to hear from you. Whose fault was it? That's the inquest that's being held today, actually, for City. Is who is at fault for this departure from the Champions League? Yet again, City have failed to get through to the very latter stages of the Champions League. And that's all very well saying, well, it's the best competition in Europe and, you know, there are a lot of great players, and that's all true. But when you are City and you are spending the amount of money you have and the amount of time and effort you have on this, well, essentially endeavour, which is to win the Champions League, forget about all of the other competitions that you can win. Forget about the FA Cup. Forget about the Premier League. Manchester City is a club that was 11 years ago bought with the express purpose of winning the Champions League. And once again, they failed to even make the semi-finals. I'm not saying that that's a failure. Making the quarterfinals of the Champions League, yeah, should be applauded. But they have not made it through to the last four, whereas Liverpool and Tottenham have. And that has to be seen as a failure. It was interesting reading the Spanish press this morning because they were gloating, frankly. Marca, a big Madrid paper, said on its front page in the subtitle, City spent 112 million and it's not enough to win Guardiola the Champions League. Pep, of course, not very popular in Madrid. Sport even were happy to, more of a Catalan paper, even they were happy to revel in Guardiola's exit rather than enjoying, as the French press did, the victory of Hugo Lloris et al. What a game, by the way, Hugo Lloris had. I know he shipped 4 goals, but he made a lot of saves, which perhaps says a lot about how City did. But I thought that this Tottenham side would have lost it. A couple of years ago, that they would have lost that game 5-1 or something. They would have been absolutely battered. But there was something different this time. And I think that might come from Pep. This was always going to be a great battle of the minds. Not many men, I think only Klopp and Mourinho, have more wins over Guardiola than Pochettino. And in his all-black outfit, maybe he was trying to imitate Diego Simeone. Maybe trying to intimidate City into thinking they were playing, you know, a more robust side than Tottenham, playing in Atletico Madrid. But didn't need to imitate them, because Pep had already given Tottenham a sniff. Just like he did against Liverpool at Anfield in the Champions League, he played Gundogan and Fernandinho in midfield, sort of retreating from his system of playing that three-man midfield with two creative and one more deep-lying. And I think at Anfield, when they did it, it said to Liverpool, City are scared of us here, let's prey on it. Let's prey on that fear. And they did, and they battered them 3-0. And I think it's the same thing psychologically. When you see that Pep Guardiola has put out two defensive midfielders to play you, what does that say to you as a team? I think when Tottenham saw the team sheet, they will have all looked around and gone, Pep knows we mean business here. Pep Guardiola thinks that we belong at this level, so why on earth should we not think? If they were lacking in any belief, Pep Guardiola gave them that belief. And that was the mistake. That was the mistake for me. He didn't play Kevin De Bruyne until the last 2 minutes of the game. Look at what Kevin did last night. We have to talk about Kevin. We need to talk about Kevin because he was absolutely unbelievable last night. His weight of pass. You know, it's all very well saying, oh, he just, you know, some space, he got in behind and put it across. No, he put it across at the exact right weight, just firm enough a number of times to beat the defender and still be controllable for whether it was Sterling or Aguero. There was one pass he hit from about 40 yards out from goal, diagonally, and he hit it like a shot. He drove it, but he hit it in such a way that it skipped past the two defenders and then held up once it got towards the City player. It was fabulous. It was this sort of top spin that he put on it. Judgment-wise, skill-wise, I don't think I've seen someone in as much control of a football as Kevin De Bruyne. As Henry Winter points out this morning, one of his turns was so sudden that Moussa Sissoko tore his right adductor just trying to keep close to him. Talk about juking a guy out of his boots. He juked Moussa Sissoko out of a groin muscle. But this team that City put out, all it said to me in the first leg was, we're scared of them. We're legitimately scared of them. And so, when City scored last night, when other Tottenham sides might have crumbled and gone, oh no, we're doing it again, they might have got, as they say, Spursy. They didn't, because they knew. This wasn't really belief anymore, it was knowledge that they could make City pay. And that's exactly what they did. Every time City made a mistake, Tottenham pounced and they scored. Tottenham smelt blood, and for once, they capitalised on it. That's not something we've seen from Tottenham before, but Guardiola made them think like that. Even without Harry Kane, by the way. And I don't buy all of these people saying that Tottenham are better without Harry Kane. They're not. They're obviously not better without Harry Kane, but it allows someone else to fulfil that role. Sometimes last night it was Dele Alli. Sometimes it was Fernando Llorente. Sometimes it was Heung-Min Son, who is obviously now a £100 million player. An absolutely remarkable find. But when Kane's not there, someone still has to do it. And the system works. I think all this proves is that Mauricio Pochettino is the manager of the year. He hasn't made a signing for 18 months. He's got a squad that's been ravaged by injury. His golden boot-winning striker, who is backed up by an ageing Spaniard, has been injured twice already this season. And yet, he is still winning games. He's still in the hunt for the top four. He's in a Champions League semi-final, for goodness sake, with a squad that hasn't been reinforced since the last time they painted the fourth rail bridge, which only takes about 2 weeks now, and a squad that has been so injured, played so much World Cup football, it completely defies belief. I heard Gary Birtles the other day say that he played 140 games in two seasons for Nottingham Forest, and they won the European Cup. He said he didn't feel tired. I've no doubt in the summer he felt tired, but Mauricio Pochettino has created something special around Tottenham. He's driving them forward over and over again. They say you can go to the well only so many times. With Mauricio Pochettino, the well is bottomless.
Love Sport.
We won the game and had a semi-final. Unbelievable, really. What a competition. It'd be our second time in a row in the semis. That's really something crazy. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable indeed. Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp there celebrating in his own quiet, private way Liverpool's progress into the Champions League semi-final. Let's be fair, they had the easiest draw, I think. Some people saying that Ajax might be the easiest draw. I think they might have got that one wrong. Porto certainly looked like the type of side Liverpool could overcome. They, of course, beat them 5-0 away from home this time last year. So, I think you have to say Liverpool deserve to be there, but they've had a relatively easy route. They played well last night. That was maybe a game that earlier this season even they might have struggled in, but obviously the 2-0 cushion really helps play with freedom, and they did do that. They didn't defend very well, and that has become a little bit of a late-season problem for Liverpool. They have shown a bit of weakness. Virgil van Dijk obviously was still pretty decent, but he wasn't perfect. So it'll be interesting to see if Liverpool do re-improve there, if that makes any sense, because early on in the season they were the best defensive side in the Premier League. They seem to have lost some of that. We'll have to see if they can get it back. Let's speak now to a man who knows all about winning in Europe with Liverpool, three times no less. It's three-time European Cup winner Terry McDermott is on the line. It was never in doubt last night, was it, Terry?
Yes. 2-0, you know, 2-0, yeah, it was a good result, and they never scored when they played at Anfield. But, you know, for 20 minutes, 25 minutes yesterday, you know, they got a goal, they had two or three good chances. if one of them would have been different. But we just turned, I think we just put it to, I think it was second gear he was in. And then all of a sudden, they were third gear, not even top gear, third gear, and they were outstanding. You know, they could have won by more. We should have won by more. But just shows you, they're never beaten. You know, they when they've gone behind, they've come back again and beaten them. So that, they're a quality outfit now, I've got to admit.
Do you think there's been a switch? Because, I'm a Liverpool fan. I've been watching them for a long time. And I feel like sometimes when it's easy, it's hard for Liverpool. But they seem to be a little bit more ruthless now. Do you think that's true?
Oh, yeah. Well, they've got them three lads up front. Fantastic, You can find them up anywhere. But, they change over. And they must baffle their team when they're thinking, well, we'll pick him up. My right back will pick him up. Got he playing on the left, and he's playing on the right. But they are. They're a fantastic team. I go every home game working there, luckily. And I just love being there because the football that they're playing is unbelievable. I mean, the atmosphere against Chelsea on Saturday was, you don't get much better than that. Mm. It was just fantastic. We beat a very, very good team because they are, on their day, they're a very good team. But we made them look, an ordinary team. So it may continue. Maybe we've got two or three big games before we play. Well, we played Cardiff before then, and then we've got three games. Two against Barcelona and one against Newcastle, so that's going to be interesting as well. I shall be at that game as well, but it's great for the fans, to got a chance to win the league and a chance to win a European Cup, which is fantastic.
It is a heck of a chance, but for a lot of guys in that squad, it's their first time even being close on this stuff. I wonder if, now obviously when you first won the European Cup, you were already league champions, but was it much, much harder the first time?
It is. People will say that, but once them players get on the pitch and the whistle goes to start the game, they forget all about that. They're playing against whoever they're playing against. Barcelona, doesn't matter if they're playing against Chelsea, doesn't matter. Because the quality, the players that we've got now, which we haven't had for a long time, we've got absolute quality everywhere. And, when you look at the bench, I looked at that bench yesterday, every one of them could have got a team in the Premier League, no problem at all. So it's fantastic, and it continues.
Do you think the City result last night, crashing out of Europe in that way, do you think that helps Liverpool's Premier League bid against them, or actually does it just mean City have more less to concentrate on?
I'll let you know after the game. They're going to be devastated, because they obviously thought they had a great chance, and they did have a great chance of winning the European Cup. But they're out. We've got to forget them. They're, the history until the last game of the season on the 12th, and we'll find out who's won what. But, but the thing is, Liverpool have got one hell of a chance to win both. But let's not get carried away. Let's, take it easy.
I've been trying.
Yeah, we can't win it.
I've been trying not to get carried away,
Terry. I know, so have I.
We're doing okay. We need a support group or something where we can just sit around and go, hi, I'm James, and I'm an over-enthusiastic Liverpool fan. And we can all just sort of get through it. You mentioned the bench last night and how much quality there is there. Do you think this Liverpool squad is now complete? Do you think that they don't need to add anyone and they don't need to worry about that side of things?
No, but when I was playing, which is about 420 years ago now.
423, I've just checked.
Yeah, what's up? Yeah. It is difficult. We've got the players that we've got now. We no matter who we're playing, when you're playing against the top teams, you feel as though, I'm not playing up against one of the best players in the world, which they are going to do with Messi. I'll handle them. Simple. Just don't let them get a run at you. If he doesn't get a run at you, he's going to beat anyone with a run at you. But if they get right up tight, it's going to be very difficult for them, But, I can't wait for the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it is. I just can't wait.
Do you think with Barcelona, it'll be easier to beat them over two legs because you've got the Anfield factor, or would you rather just try and nick it in 90 minutes at a neutral venue?
Just like to win, get a goal. If we scored a goal there, doesn't have to give us a big chance to get home. But they're such a quality player, It is going to be difficult to beat them. There's no two ways about it. But they'll be thinking the same way. These are a good team, Liverpool, and they are.
Yeah.
And, hey, something to look forward to, isn't it, for every Liverpoolian?
Yeah, certainly is, Terry. I don't know if my heart will quite take it. I hope we don't get a 4-3 like last night. I definitely won't be able to cope.
Oh, I'm not fed up with them 4-3s at Newcastle.
Yeah, 0-0s all the way home. That'll be all right.
Exactly.
Terry, thank you so much for joining us. A real pleasure. An absolute legend of the game. Brilliant. That's Terry McDermott, a 3-time European Cup winner and a 5-time title winner with Liverpool, of course, in that great 70s and early 80s team. Can Liverpool do the double? Things are just starting to align, but let's try and keep calm about it.
Love Sport.
I think what was different about Tottenham last night was when they came under pressure, they didn't seem to panic. It wasn't as though they struggled to find a way back into the game or anything. They didn't start throwing the ball forward. They just trusted in their system. And that's what's different about Spurs now. They have a system that they know or think, and actually I think it is know. They know the system works now. They've got this sort of unshatterable belief. Now I think, and I said this earlier, I think an element of that came from Pep Guardiola. Because by picking that defensive lineup in the first leg, he showed a level of respect for Spurs that maybe they didn't even think of themselves. Much as footballers will always say, oh, you know, my teammates are great. This team have never been to these levels before. They are in uncharted territory for them. And when a manager shows you that kind of respect, it changes how you think about yourself. If Guardiola had come out and played, look, not playing Kevin De Bruyne in that first leg, it started to look like an enormous error. If they'd done that, who knows what that might have done to Tottenham? Even if the impact on the pitch wasn't as great as we think it might have been, who knows what it might have done to Tottenham in their head to go, oh my goodness, Pep's played the full lot. Sane starting, De Bruyne starting, Aguero starting. How on earth are we going to cope with that? I have no idea how you're supposed to cope with that front line, frankly. Hope they don't all play on the same night seems like the best idea. But somehow Tottenham found a way into the Champions League semi-finals. Let's speak to a man who knows Tottenham inside out. It's Jamie O'Hara on the line. Jamie, you must be on cloud nine today.
Oh, I mean, what a game. Absolute classic. I've done the commentary last night on Sky Sports News, and I tell you what, that first 20 minutes was the best 20 minutes of football I think I've ever seen. It was just end-to-end stuff. I couldn't believe how Tottenham come out and just went for it. It was incredible.
Do you think both sides came out and decided that it was going to be an incredibly high-octane start, and it was almost a case of neither relenting?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe the tempo that they were playing at. Both teams, I thought Tottenham would sit in for the first 20 minutes, try and keep it to, you know, a 0-0 and then just go from there. But they were streaming forward, they were after the ball, they were, you know, they played a diamond formation, they had two centre-forwards, I thought they would only play with one. And they really went for it. It was a fantastic watch. And in a game of such huge magnitude, I didn't realise how many mistakes there were. I mean, everyone was making mistakes all over the pitch. It was crazy.
Does it sometimes, when you get a, you know, when you get that early goal, as players, when the stadium goes a bit crazy, do you find yourself just playing with so much adrenaline in your system that you could only attack, and maybe that actually that was a little bit out of control rather than a deliberate effort from the two teams?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what happened. They went out and there's such a high octane atmosphere and the roller coaster of emotions leading up to the game. You know, because obviously Tottenham must have really been fancying themselves, but Man City at home must have fancied themselves to win as well. So it was just an incredible game to be a part of as a player. It must have been, you know, it must have been an amazing feeling. But I just could not believe. I mean, they were so clinical. I think the first four goals was four chances, four goals. So, you know, you can't get past the fact that they were both really clinical. But the way they both went at it and the way they, you know, both attacked, it was a fantastic watch.
Do you think this is a case of Pep getting it wrong in that first leg? The way Kevin De Bruyne played last night just made me think, no matter how good Tottenham are, if he'd played that first leg, surely we'd be talking about City in the semi-finals today.
I mean, he was absolutely on a different planet last night to everyone else on that pitch for me. De Bruyne, he ran the show. He was everything he'd done, his energy. And considering he's hardly played this season, his fitness levels, the way he just took control of the game, I thought he was different class. And yeah, I think if he was in the first game, I think they probably would have had a better result. But Tottenham done really well in that first leg to keep them to, obviously, you know, not scoring. And they kept Aguero quiet. They played a diamond formation, which I just think really suits Spurs at the minute with the personnel they've got available. And yeah, I mean, I can't believe they got it done. They're going into a semi-final now against Ajax, who, you know, I believe that they'd be looking at thinking they could possibly win that match.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, much as Ajax have knocked out Real Madrid and Juventus, they're not Barcelona. If you're going to choose someone to play, it certainly wouldn't be them, but it might be Ajax.
Yeah.
Go on, Jamie.
They've been unbelievable in terms of, you know, I've watched their games, Ajax, and they have been a joy to watch. They absolutely battered Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. So, you know, they're not a team that you're going to think, oh, we can roll these over. But as I said, Tottenham are going to be looking at thinking, if we're going to play anyone out of the, you know, the remaining three, Ajax probably would be the team you'd want to play. So, you know, they're going to be looking at thinking there's a possible big final, and it could be an all-English final, which would be great as well.
Yeah, well, I'm a Liverpool fan, so I certainly hope that it will be. It would be something special indeed, and in that great stadium in Madrid. I wonder, do you think Tottenham now are starting to believe, because I've always thought, you know, people use the word Spursy, and I kind of hate it, but it relates to the fact that Tottenham haven't always looked like or felt like they belong at the highest level. Do you think this team now, after that result, will start to believe that?
Yeah, why not? I mean, they've gone and beat probably the best team in the country. I know Liverpool have been up there as well this season, but I still believe Man City are the team to beat. And, you know, they've played fantastic in a two-legged game. And, yeah, I think, why not? Why not believe it? You know, they were fantastic. Eriksen, Son, they've all stepped up when Harry Kane's been injured. You know, Dele Alli was really good last night, and Lucas Moura has just been in fantastic form. So, you know, they've got players now who are willing to step up to the plate and can do it on the big stage. You know, they've dropped away in the Premier League, which was frustrating. But I think if they sign a couple of players in the summer and then they're in the new stadium, which they've started great with, which if they can turn that into a fortress, I really believe that Tottenham could have a season to remember next year.
There's been a lot of talk. I mean, we all know how long it's been and exactly how long it's been since Tottenham last signed a player. We've talked a little bit about someone like Wilfried Zaha being the kind of guy Tottenham could bring in this summer. Do you think he would fit well into that system?
Wilfried Zaha is a fantastic player. He's a great prospect. But, you know, he's not playing for England. He's not starting for England. You know, and I think Tottenham need to be looking at someone now who's going to be, who's going to change that team and is going to add more to that team. Does Zaha play in front of Moura or Eriksen or Son? You know, I don't necessarily think so. I think they need to really strengthen in midfield. I'd like to see him sign a world-class centre midfielder. Would be my first thing that I think Tottenham need to do, but. They need a couple, but I'd like to see him go for someone real special, just to be like, we've arrived now, we've got a stadium, this is what we're thinking and this is where we're going. I don't think they need to sign bit part players that potentially don't even just strengthen the team that they've already got.
So presumably that means giving Mauricio Pochettino a pretty hefty checkbook this summer, because you and I both know great midfielders don't come cheap.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you want to compete and you want to contend at the top of the title, then you have to spend. That's just the way it is. You know, world-class players cost money, and you know they produce in the big moments, produce on the big stage. Tottenham have done unbelievable in terms of not signing anyone and still competing, but they haven't won a trophy. So if they can, I mean, look, there's still a trophy in the pipeline with the Champions League. Do they do it? No one knows yet. But I think if they really want to stay where they are and stay competing with the Man Cities and which that they can do, then they need to spend. I think they need to spend 100 million.
100. I mean, I'm starting to think if 100 million is enough these days. 100 million barely gets you a player, frankly. But I don't know.
I think they need to. You know, and if you can't get two world class players for 100 million quid, then I mean the game's gone the complete wrong direction for me.
Yeah, quite. Jamie, thanks so much for coming on and keeping a lid on your excitement. I'm impressed. I assumed all Tottenham fans today would be going absolutely mental. That's Jamie O'Hara there, former Tottenham midfielder. 100 million quid probably just about gets you two world-class players, but it's a tough sell.
Love Sport.
Who might be about to replace Gerard Miller? It looks now, after he returned an adverse finding in a drugs test back in March. We found that out earlier this week, and it looks as though he will not be fighting against Anthony Joshua on June the 1st. It's a big disappointment to a certain extent, because I was just about getting behind the idea that Gerard Miller might be an interesting fight. You know, he's an enormous opponent. He would have provided a slightly different challenge for Anthony Joshua. I don't think he's a particularly good opponent, But this is not a fight about Joshua being challenged. It's a fight about Joshua showcasing his skills to the American market. And now we're once again, and how often does it happen in boxing, we're required to find a short-term opponent. 6 weeks is not too bad. You remember when Joshua was supposed to fight Kubrat Pulev about 18 months ago. He had to get Carlos Takam at only about 11 days' notice. The guy did very well, but he was never going to beat Joshua. The names that Eddie Hearn mentions, Luis Ortiz, first of all, a difficult guy to fight. He's a southpaw. He's very experienced. He's got a great amateur record. He has knockout power. He took Deontay Wilder and I think hurt Deontay Wilder in a very big way. Took him all the way to 10 rounds and stung him in the middle of the fight. If he had more cardio ability, I think he might have beaten him. I'd be amazed if Joshua gets in the ring with Luis Ortiz. I think it's a weird risk to take. He's a southpaw. He's a different type of fighter from what he was going to be preparing for. So I think that's out. Michael Hunter mentioned there, someone who we know at the station, and we're hoping he'll be actually coming on Love Sport Drive later this afternoon, just around 4 o'clock, to talk about his chances of fighting Joshua. He's a cruiserweight, really. He's fought in the heavyweight division. He beat Martin Bacoli, Barry McGuigan's big prospect, beat Alexander Usinov. So he's got a couple of half-decent heavyweight wins. But in the end, this is a guy who fought Alexander Usyk at cruiserweight and lost to him. Went 12 rounds, but nevertheless lost to him. Some ability, a big step up from it for him, but a good way for him to sell his name a little bit more. Same sort of thing for Adam Kowacki. What works about him is he's from Brooklyn, he's from New York. So he would give that added Brit Yank element that they quite like about this fight. I think the fact that Eddie Hearn is throwing around these names, Ajit Kabayel, European champion, Manuel Char, who's a WBA regular champion, which to people who don't know boxing, that means nothing. It's a bauble. It's not a real belt. He's just a heavyweight. These guys are all relative journeymen. In terms of the people that he has played in the last, that he's faced in the last, what, 3 years? I don't think any of these short-notice opponents really match them. I think Joshua will have an easier fight against any of them than he has had in years. And that's disappointing, because we're already disappointed with the way boxing has gone in the heavyweight division. We're already disappointed that we've not seen Joshua in the ring with Wilder yet, Joshua in the ring with Fury yet, Fury in the ring with Wilder again. All those things are not happening. So when we then see Joshua go into the ring with, you know, someone who frankly is not necessarily a global level heavyweight, that's going to disappoint boxing fans. And it's going to once again put off the likes of the casual fan who don't believe that boxing is necessarily a sport that should be mainstream. It's going to keep putting them off. It's really frustrating. I don't want to see Joshua in the ring with someone who doesn't deserve to be there. I want to see him in the ring with someone who does deserve to be there. Dillian Whyte, for example, is a guy who is desperate for a world title shot and does deserve one. Doesn't look like he's going to get it this time around. And that annoys me.
Love Sport.
I'm delighted to say, tells a little bit about the situation with the Scottish FA and post-Alex McLeish life, is Scottish football correspondent for The Times, Michael Grant, is on the line now. Michael, did you see this coming this week?
Yeah, I did. There's been really a kind of sword of Damocles hanging over Alex McLeish for 28 days now, which is the gap there was between Scotland losing 3-0 to Kazakhstan and today's meeting of the SFA board, the first scheduled meeting since that debacle in Astana, which, you know, even those of us that were there and then that night thought, I'm not sure that Alex McLeish can survive this. You know, it was only the Euro 2020 opening qualifying tie, but it came on the back of a kind of wobbly Nations League campaign that Scotland did win, but not really that convincingly in a group with Albania and Israel. So I think, yeah, there's been a feeling that the writing has been on the wall for Alex, you know, since that really bad defeat a month ago.
Why did it take so long? You say it's been 28 days. That feels like a long time to make the decision. Now, I know it's not pressing because of the way the fixture list is, but it can't have been pleasant for anyone involved to have waited that long.
Yeah, I mean, I think the SFA do deserve a bit of criticism for that, because really the speculation, you know, erupted immediately that that McLeish wouldn't survive. There was a story in one of the tabloid newspapers up here saying that he would be sacked today. That was on March the 28th. So that, you know, now it wasn't right, but it obviously there was more than a grain of truth in it because he has gone. Mm. But so what you've had in the meantime is, you know, Alex has been ostensibly going around doing the Scotland manager's job, going to games. He'll have been speaking to clubs. He'll have been organising, you know, scouting trips and even training drills and stuff like that. All the while thinking, am I actually going to be in charge when the next two games come round in June? It's been a little bit demeaning for him, I think. And I think that he has deserved a bit better treatment than that. Because if the SFA had made their mind up, you know, they could have done it in a matter of days after the defeat in Astana. I mean, there's only seven members of the SFA board. It wouldn't have been that difficult to get them together or even to have a conference call. Mm. I don't think it makes any difference in terms of the Scotland team, where, you know, our next games are not until June. But I think just to treat Alex with a bit of respect, it could have been handled better.
Yes, exactly. Funnily enough, I saw him about a week ago in Euston Station and he chucked a couple of quid in someone's charity bucket and it made me think, well, you know what? It's pretty unpleasant being Alex McLeish at the moment, but you're still taking the time to do that. It made me think he might not be such a terrible bloke. So that was
no, he's a really good guy.
Yeah, exactly, and probably doesn't deserve what's happened. But what seems to be most people are saying is that Alex is just collateral damage here. It's not really his fault. This goes a little bit deeper in the SFA. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, of course it does. By my count, we will now be looking for our eighth permanent manager since we last qualified for a tournament. You know, so that proves to you that you know, there are systemic failures and problems in Scotland, and that you know, decapitating the national team's management structure isn't going to automatically make that bigger difference. But you know, we are still a kind of very demanding fan base up here and media. And if the results are poor, as they have generally been for Alex, then the manager's not going to survive. But Scotland have some really good, promising players. You know, you've got Andy Robertson, you've got Scott McTominay, you've got three or four of the boys at Celtic who are becoming core players. You've got Ryan Fraser at Bournemouth. But, you know, there is a nucleus of a good squad there, and that's what makes it really frustrating that that's not really transmitted into a series of positive results over one campaign. And of course, the other issue we have is that there's just a feeling that Scotland's status and kind of pulling power has diminished. And you know, we under Alex there has been a kind of culture of call-offs and players pulling out of squads and talking about managing injuries for their club sides. And you know, you take all that at face value, but you also think, well, you know, really, is this a kind of code for we don't fancy this regime? And it becomes a little bit too easy to pull out, I suspect. You know?
Yeah, it's bad to see. Let's talk about the new man, whoever that might be. A few early names being thrown around. The usual suspects, also a couple from internal appointments. Steve Clark's one that I think makes sense, but, you know, similarly with the call-off culture, I don't know if it would be a good job for him to take.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Clark's a fairly inscrutable character. He's not going to be hoodwinked into saying more than he wants to by guys like us in the media, you know.
Sounds like a man who's tried.
He's done a terrific job at Kilmarnock. You know, if you're going to be brutal, you would say, how much more can you do with Kilmarnock? I know that he has close family in England that he would like to get back and see more of. Now, to be honest, you could do the Scotland job and commute up and down from a home in England. Gordon Strachan did it with no problem at all. So, if you know, that could be something that could work in his favour. Having said that, he's been linked this morning with the Fulham vacancy, and it may be that Scotland would lose him to you know, an attractive championship offer. The internal candidate, Scott Gemmell, who's been the under-21 manager for Scotland the last few years, and also Malky Mackay, who's the head of performance at the SFA and had a previous spell as caretaker manager for Scotland. You know, those two are both contenders. But to be honest, I genuinely get the feeling that the SFA have not given too much thought yet to what direction they go in, and that they're pretty open-minded. And it may be that, you know, that could include anything. There could be a foreign manager that go down that route. It could be a younger guy that they try and get from a club side. I think nothing is off the table at the moment.
Well, nothing should be off the table, because it can't get any worse, take it that way. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have your expert insight into these things. That's Michael Grant, the Scottish football correspondent for The Times, talking about who might replace Alex McLeish. Sounds like the SFA haven't lined anyone up. They haven't ruled anyone out, which means, Ben, you and me are still in the running.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup, and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at carvana.com.
Love sports.
My next guest might be a little delicate today. I worry about having a former Manchester City player on the show today after quite what happened. Mark Lillis is on the line. Mark, I hope you're all right. How are you getting on?
Just about. No, I'm fine now. I've obviously slept on it, but what a fantastic game. And, you know, I was just thinking about Raheem Sterling then. You know, you go and score your hat-trick, you know, you go and celebrate, and then all of a sudden, you know, it gets taken away from you. And, you know, the lads last night, going back, you know, obviously the next player, you know, did they sleep last night? It must have been awful for the City lads. And the Tottenham lads, they would have slept well, because it was a fantastic result for them. But, you know, I feel for us. But, you know, that's we have to accept it in life. It happens.
How hard will it be for the players now? They've got to play Tottenham again this weekend, and to pick themselves up. How long does that take with results like that? Does it stick with you for a long time?
The head coach, so I'll get right into him. And the players, to be truthful, last night when the Spurs goal went in and VAR came on, we didn't put our heads down. We just accepted the decision. I mean, it's the modern day now. It's not going to change. You know, I was brought up in the 70s, 80s, 90s playing, and then went into my coaching. And you have to change in life. You know, we know it's going to be. And you know, VAR, you know, rules out the last goal. But, you know, that happens, and we're going to have to, it's coming in next season. We're going to have to deal with it, because up and down the season you're going to make, you know, good decisions and decisions that don't go for you. But they will come in, you know, today, and it'll be a lot of positive talking. No one can come in with their heads down. Everyone, you know, because there's still a lot to play for. It's a massive weekend, you know, massive three or four games for City.
It must be slightly surreal. I mean, I, you know, the we're not really here chants. I used to cover Man City 4 or 5 years ago, and then the fans were still thinking, I can't quite believe this is us. Do you think now the club, the team, the fans even, are starting to say, actually, we belong at this level and we should be in Champions League semi-finals. We are here to stay.
100%. It was the first time last night, well, first time, when the goal went in, the Spurs goal, I didn't feel, oh, that's it. I thought, we'll go and get another goal and get back in it. And, you know, that's the way we're playing at the minute. And like we say, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, we couldn't maybe say that. But now we're there, we belong there. And, you know, it's all unfortunate. But, you know, the players and the staff and the club will take from that. You know, it's tough to take. And the fans were fantastic. My son Joshua was there, and my grandson Cohen. And he rung me after the game. He was buzzing, but he was upset. But today he's rung me in his flat, because he's, you know, he's been sank in that we're out of the cup.
Mm. Kevin De Bruyne was fabulous last night, as we know he can be and has been so many times over the last couple of years. But he didn't play more than a minute of the first leg. Is that starting to look like quite a serious misstep on the part of Pep Guardiola?
I wouldn't say misstep. I mean, it's the decision that the manager's made, and this squad take it on the chin. They don't mind that, you know. But, you know, we played ever so well last night, and, you know, some of the stuff. I thought last night as well, we made two mistakes and Spurs just went bang and scored. You know, that's right at the top of the scale in football. And we come back and scored fantastic goals. But a lot of the top players, big games, and a lot of them players proved that last night.
I remember speaking to Steve Fletcher, who's a legend at Bournemouth, been there a long, long time. And he was talking about a Bournemouth game where they'd thrown away a 2-0 lead against Manchester United, and how they went and sat in Eddie Howe's office for about 10 minutes afterwards and no one said a word. I wonder, once you've been through that, because I know you've worked in the backroom of lots of different clubs, how do you sit there and go, right, what do we say to the players? What is your plan in those situations to pick them up in such a quick stretch of time?
I think it's about motivation. Who motivates the motivator? You know, and I think Pep will be looking at it, and he'll take from his staff. And you're absolutely, but you can't, especially in the modern day now, you can't go in the dressing room as a head coach or a coach or part of the staff and be down and have your head down. You've got to be positive. You've got to be positive and get the players believing back what we can do next. Because we'll be talking about winning the league with the FA Cup. You know, we've got to talk about that and think about that. We can't just shove that under the carpet now. They're big trophies to win, and we're in a great position to win them.
Do you think, I mean, given the opportunities City had in this, you know, the run to the final that would have been through Ajax. I know Ajax are good, but they're not Barcelona. Do you think even if City win the treble now, there might just be a tinge of what might have been? Because these opportunities to win the quadruple won't come around very often.
I think because you've got that many games coming up and the season's coming fast, and all of a sudden there's a player and there's maybe a member of staff, you maybe get on holiday, and that's when you reflect. You know, you're thinking, wow, we were that close. Mm. And you'll see it getting played all over again, you know, just ignore that, you know. But, yeah, I think that's when it'll... You don't really need downtime now. You don't really need to be on your own. You need to be together as a group. You know, you all need to pull together and build on what we built. So, you know, it's tough. Like I said, you know, you're coming on as a player in the car and you get back home and, you know, 12 o'clock at night, half 12, 1 o'clock, whatever. You know, what do? You know, you just missed out on a semi-final place in the, you know, Champions League. You have to take it and you have to get on with it. That's life, you know. It's so important to think like that. Raheem Sterling for me was unbelievable. Like I said, I felt so for him. You know, he's looking up at the sky to people that he's lost in his life. You know, they're looking down on him, and he goes and gets a hat trick, and we go through, and then it's taken away. You know, that's character as well. We've got to come through that, and we will do.
Were you okay with that? Because it was the right decision. I saw Pep asked in his press conference, "Are you still a fan of VAR?" And he sort of went, "Well, yeah. I wish it hadn't happened like that, but I'm still a supporter of it." Are you okay as a former player, as a coach as well, with that system working the way it did last night?
It's got to be done maybe a little bit quicker though. But you know, we had to all the fans were celebrating and everyone was celebrating, and then it come up that it's going to be. But like I said, you know, start the interview. It's here. It's modern day football. We know we have to deal with it. And you know, that's as a coach myself. You know, you've got to accept it. And like Pat said, you know, we didn't include it last night, but you know, we might get some, you know, next season because it's coming into the Premier League, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Just finally, Mark, City, they've still got, as you say, two massive trophies to fight for. How many of those do you think they'll win the FA Cup? Do you think they'll win the Premier League?
I think it's going to go all the way to the Premier League. I think the FA Cup, we've got a really good chance. Mm. I think we'll go about it the right way. I think this team, even if they're playing Watford or Liverpool or Man United, they'll play the same. You know, it's not like they'll take it easy. Definitely the FA Cup, they won't take it easy because Watford are a good side.
Yeah.
And then I think it'll go down to the wire for the between, obviously, Liverpool and City. Fingers crossed, you know, I mean, last night when that goal went in, the Raheem's, I was jumping on the couch. I don't know why. I was like a 16-year-old. My wife's coming. So what are you doing? I said, we've won. And then next thing you know, head down.
That's WAR, I think. Wife-assisted referee, that is. Yeah. Get down, Mark. You're nearly 60. Come on.
Oh, yeah, brilliant. I like that one. I'll do that. I'll give it a mention. All right, mate.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us. And you sound remarkably upbeat for a man who's jumping on the sofa for 25 seconds last night. Yeah, that was Mark Lillis, who managed to cope with all the VAR calls from yesterday somehow. He's not the only one who was struggling. Despite the loss and VAR controversy, City boss Pep Guardiola still backs the technology.
It's just to see that maybe the goal from Llorente is handball. For one angle, it's handball. For the angle he saw, the referee is not. But I'm fine for the fair football, for the fair decision. So the referee must be helped sometimes. And good, it's offside, it's offside. Right, what can I say?
Even Josh, Mark's son, Josh Lillis, who's a goalkeeper for Rochdale, but a City fan, even he, interesting hearing Mark saying there, rang up and said, you know, I'm still buzzing. I'm still buzzing from the game. Sure, he was a bit flat the next day because they lost, but everyone was still buzzing. It was a properly electric night of action. Now, my producer Ben has started to rail against VAR. He reckons it ruins the experience for proper game-going fans, like him, the people who make those grounds that attract global audiences, what they are. He thinks, and he's wrong, by the way, that people will stop going. That he, even he, a die-hard blue, cut me and I bleed blue Ben Anson, might stop going because VAR makes him less enjoy the game. But the point is that the sport is about a roller coaster. That's, yeah, it's sad when you lose. And I've been on the losing side plenty of times in sport, watching and playing. Often my support is something of a curse on a team. But the elation when you win is fleeting too. So that 90 minutes that you spend in the stadium, it's all about the ups and downs. It's all about the different emotions that you feel through a game. Obviously, you'd rather there are more ups than downs, but they all create drama. And Ben will tell me it's not fair to give you a goal and then chalk it off. But imagine being a Leicester fan in that famous playoff game. The jubilation of getting a penalty awarded, the gutting feeling of missing it, and even more gutted when Troy Deeney goes down the other end and scores less than 60 seconds later. Or even think about City's famous title win, when Manchester United were left for a minute or two thinking they'd won the title at the Stadium of Light, only for City to cruelly deny them. All of those fans had those highs and those lows within a couple of seconds. It didn't kill anyone that I know of. It didn't harm anyone. It didn't create any less drama, did it? They're two of the most famous moments in English football history. Sure, it's a dreadful feeling to be on the wrong end of it, but it's a rollercoaster of emotions that we live for. VAR doesn't remove that. It creates it. And crucially, we get the right decision. Pep Guardiola, as you heard, was a picture of grace last night. He accepted the VAR decision, as you have to. Because as a video-assisted referee, they don't get it wrong very often. And with offside, it's black and white. The referee doesn't even go and overlook at it, because it's a defined thing. There's a line, and if you're beyond it, you're offside. So don't tell me that it's better after a European tie to have Didier Drogba in a pair of flip-flops shouting is a disgrace down the camera lens, or Neil Warnock standing in a tunnel complaining about biased referees against lower league clubs. Last night was unscripted drama that we could not have made up, and VAR provided the Hollywood ending. If that's the kind of thing that VAR can produce, then I don't care. Give it the Lord of the Rings franchise. Give it the new Harry Potter film. It's the director that we all need.
Love Sport.
Arsenal's clash with Napoli in Napoli at San Paoli. It's a tough old stadium to go to. Only Juventus have won there in all competitions this season. That includes plenty of top sides as well. But what if Arsenal do go out? Because the Premier League's starting to look like a tough task to finish in the top four. There's a real battle going on there. I think the Europa League is as good a chance for Arsenal to qualify for next year's Champions League. And that is a huge, hugely important goal for Unai Emery. I don't think Arsenal fans will have expected him to reach the Champions League next season. But they certainly would have thought that that had to be his goal, to try and get them back into the top level of European competition, because they haven't often missed out on it, have they? Now, we understand that Champions League football will make quite a sizable difference, for example, to Unai Emery's transfer budget this summer. £45 million he'll have to spend if they're in the Europa League. If they qualify for the Champions League, that could go up to £75 million. That's what we understand Arsenal's different in budget might be. The problem is, I don't know if £75 million quid's enough. What are we really looking at in terms of Arsenal, what they need? Probably a left-back. I don't think they have enough strength or depth there. You're probably thinking about another wide attacking forward. We understand Unai Emery wants one of those to complement the system he's trying to build around Mesut Ozil. Danny Welbeck's leaving this summer as well. You'd think he'd probably want another striker then. Not to mention the fact you're replacing Aaron Ramsey. Oh, and by the way, Arsenal are terrible at centre-half. Now, how on earth are you going to deal with all of that with 75 million quid? Never mind, 45 million quid. That buys you one of those if you're lucky. And let's face it, he hasn't covered himself in glory so far. Denis Suarez, remember him? Yeah, Arsenal signed him actually in January on loan, but with a deal where they could get him on a permanent. I haven't seen him. He might actually not make a start for Arsenal in his entire career, which would be one of the more remarkable things you've ever seen. But they can't afford many flops like that, Arsenal, because Tottenham are going to spend money this summer. We know that. Manchester United are probably going to spend money this summer. Liverpool and City always do now because they're generating enough revenue to do so. Who knows what's going to happen at Chelsea? They might not even be in the same ownership this time next week. But either way, Arsenal cannot afford to get left behind this summer. Because they're going to need to spend, I think, even if they've got a £75 million budget, I think they need to spend upwards of £100 million to get that team into the kind of shape where it can finish third. That's really how bad I think this squad is. These away performances, you know, yeah, sure, they've got talented players. I mean, look, I think one of the most talented is Aaron Ramsey. He's walking away for free. But they've got Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, Alexandre Lacazette, Henrik Mkhitaryan. Granit Xhaka has started to look like a good player in midfield. But when they still fail to perform away from home, it makes you question everything about the side. It makes you ask, who are the leaders in that dressing room? And what on earth are they doing with themselves? Because if you're a leader in that dressing room, I would say to you, we're bad away from home. I want you to step up every single time we go away and be the person that lifts us up. And at the moment, it doesn't look like Arsenal have anyone who does that. It's not always the star player. It's not always the best player. Sometimes it's not even someone who's necessarily a first-team starter. Look at Fabian Delph. Every squad he's ever been in, we know he's been a very important part of the leadership group, but he doesn't start every game. You don't have to. So someone, whether it be someone they parachute in, you know, you take, I think, the type of player you're looking at is Mauro Icardi. He's the kind of guy who could come in and lift a dressing room. And that's what you need. Kind of forget what position they play in. Kind of forget what footballing abilities they bring to Arsenal. They need to basically recruit a leader. They need to recruit someone who people will follow to hell and back. Because at the moment, they don't seem to have anyone like that. As if Mesut Ozil is inside the top five for the captaincy. He's the bloke who pulls the armband on when they go away from home. The man who you can't trust to play in a slightly punchy seven-a-side Power League game because it might be a bit rough for little Mesut. Honestly, I don't understand why they think that's an acceptable bloke to have as part of their leadership team. It's an absolute farce. And when Unai Emery sits down with the people who make the decisions at Arsenal, because, by the way, it's not him anymore, when he sits down, I think he should be saying, look, yeah, these are the different footballing things I need, but I also need someone who's going to pull this team up by its bootlaces, who's going to start making sure that we perform away from home to standards. Because for years, Arsenal haven't held themselves to a high enough standard. Arsene Wenger seemed to allow mediocrity to seep in and not deal with it. That kind of thing is a disease that takes a long time to cure, and that's what Arsenal have got to do. They've got to cure this disease of mediocrity.